San Diego's talk radio leader, 760 KFMB presents It's Your Money and Your Life. For the next hour, Richard Muzio and Joe Vecchio will educate and inform you on matters related to your financial future, your life, and your leisure. Now, with It's Your Money and Your Life, here are Richard and Joe.
All right, good evening, everybody. My name is Joe Vecchio, your co-host, announcer, and producer, coming to you from KFMB Studios with 50,000 watts of power. We're heard not just in San Diego County, but Orange County, L.A. County, up the coast of Seattle on a good night, down to Cabo, out to the desert. If you download the app for 760 KFMB, you can hear the show on any device. All these podcasts are on highwaymoney.com. And if you search iTunes for the title of the show, I think we're there in two places. And now it's time to introduce the main man of the hour. He's a CPA extraordinaire. He's a best-selling author, a lecturer, a marathon runner, and a family office expert advising several high net worth families. His name is Richard Muzio. Richard, good evening. How are you tonight? And CPA extraordinaire. I hope I said that.
Oh, well, if you didn't say it, you okay. Just did. So, Joe, I'm doing good. But there's a rumor that we've been heard in Alaska. Is this true?
How did you hear about that?
I don't remember, but is it true?
I talked to a guy and his wife from Arizona. They lived there for 5 years in Wasilla. And they swear they've heard this show.
Well, you said Arizona. I said Alaska.
I know. They used to live there. Yeah, for 5 years. How did you hear that?
I don't remember.
Because I just sent... Oh, I know.
Did you just send something around?
Oh, I sent it to Dave to check it out, and I copied you. So, okay. Yeah, we got to check that out.
We got to check that out.
That's amazing. Well, Dave has told me this show has been heard in Norway or Finland because they have these huge towers.
Right, they have the big towers
in
Norway.
They want these.
I have a friend who heard me in Norway. He comes to this country 6 months out of the year and then lives there 6 months out of the year.
Is that right?
He said, I was putting on my cross-country ski boots to go for a little cross-country ski, and I heard you on the radio. Like, that's pretty cool.
You know, FM radio can't get out of San Diego County. You know, that's cool. That's the difference between AM and FM. This signal trap.
Yeah, we get out of the United States of America.
Well, after sundown and on weekends.
Exactly.
The signal goes up to 50,000
watts. So Alaska, cool. So, anyway,
not to mention the web, but anyway.
Before we get to our great guest, let me tell you what I was doing last week for Thanksgiving. So the Oceanside Turkey Trot, it was our 10th anniversary. For the third year in a row, we had over 10,000 runners.
And plenty of TV coverage, I saw.
Oh, so much TV coverage. Yeah. It was incredible.
Live and beyond, but
live
anyway.
Live and beyond, it was great. So we had over 10,000 runners and raised a ton of money for charity. You know, $5 of every runner's entry fee goes to their charity of their choice up in Oceanside. And, of course, a lot of the charities who are on our platform do their own fundraising as well, where they get to keep 100% of what they raise. Our largest team, of course, was the Austin Bice Foundation. Had almost 500 runners out supporting the cause. Our major sponsor, of course, is Pacific Marine Credit Union. You may have seen Pacific Marine Credit Union's billboards advertising our great event on all the major freeways here leading up to it. So it was a huge, huge success, also because the predicted rain never even came close to getting here.
Yeah, but you had some waves.
Oh, it was so cool. I wanted to mention that.
Because king tide.
We had a king tide, so coming down the final turn onto the home stretch. Well, you know, I run the 10K for Sirius, then I put on the turkey costume and do the 5K. Coming down the home stretch on the 5K on the strand, a huge wave broke over my head and got me soaking wet. Hit the rocks, went flying right over the race course. But the 10K was really cool.
Who needs Shamu when you have the king tide?
Yeah, getting all the turkeys wet. But on the 10K, which we put in for our 10th anniversary, we actually ran all the way on the pier and back. So we got to run over the Pacific Ocean, which was so cool. So, yeah, that was the 10th annual Pacific Marine Credit Union, a huge success. And guess what, Joe? We are now the eighth largest turkey trot in the country.
I heard that.
We are second largest in California next to San Jose, so that means by definition we are the largest in Southern California as well as Central California.
Isn't that something?
We had a big headline in the UT.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on all that.
So that was cool. And then, like we didn't have enough to do, my wife's Carlsbad Classic Tennis Tournament ran all week at Park Hyatt Aviara. That was a huge success as well. Our presenting sponsor there, Go Macro, the great Macro Bar. And Janina Wickemeyer from Belgium was the women's winner, 6-3, 7-6 against the great player who just came out of Stanford recently, Nicole Gibbs, in the finals. Had great weather all week, except one morning where we were delayed by about 30 minutes because of some rain that blew through later, you know, late in the night. Out at the lovely Park Hyatt Aviara, really well attended. I think the sponsors had a great time. The players absolutely loved the venue, as you might guess, at the Park Hyatt Aviara. And so that was a huge hit, huge success, and we're going to be even bigger and better next year with that.
Well, congratulations all the way around.
So it was a busy week.
Yeah, it was great.
I feel like I'm still running. Because, you know, in addition to doing the 9.3 miles on Thanksgiving, I paced my wife Mary in a half marathon the previous Saturday in Meb's big half marathon 5 days earlier. So in the span of 5 days, I did a half marathon. plus another 15K 5 days later.
Oh, my gosh.
No, that's what that's not quite what I was saying. I was like, why am I doing this again?
Well, now you can prepare to eat a lot at Christmas, I guess. So,
and also a big thank you to KFMB and the TV station here. They were big supporters of the tennis tournament, in particular, raising some funds for their Warrior Foundation.
Yeah, that was
on that
great.
Tuesday. That was good stuff.
That was great. A lot of Marines out there this year.
Yeah, we had a lot of Marines out there. We also benefited Operation Underground Railroad, who was a guest on our show maybe about 6 months ago, helping to ease the plight caused by young children being abducted all across the world. So
yeah.
Operation Underground Railroad, OUR, also had a very successful gala up there.
Great.
That kicked off the tournament.
Great. And the hotel was happy with all the activity. Huh?
Oh, man, the hotel was so happy. They were booked, sold out. Last year, they were only maybe 70% full.
Yeah. Well, so outstanding.
It was good stuff.
Well, we've got an interesting show tonight. We've got...
So I'm out of breath. I'm done talking. You guys take it away.
We have a gentleman who he's a lawyer, very distinguished and highly regarded attorney, specializing in the field of equestrian law and in the whole thoroughbred industry, as you can imagine. He operates out of Del Mar. His name is Bing I. Bush, Jr. Bing, welcome to our show.
Thanks, guys. That's great to be here.
It is such a pleasure to have you here. Full disclosure, I've known Bing a few years and his wife, Jules, and terrific people. Aside from whatever he does professionally, he's just always a pleasure. They're always a pleasure to be around both of them, individually or collectively. How right, Bing?
Well, that's a reflection of you, pal. Thank you for that.
I saw a horse tied to the hitching post out front, Bing. Did you ride up on your horse?
Yeah, he was supposed to finish better in that race, but we figured we'd make him a riding horse, you know. But I have a question for you. Do turkeys really trot?
They really do. Yeah, they can't really get off the ground.
So Bing, you're born
and landlocked.
Born and raised in Kentucky, but first we have to ask you about the name Bing. Now Bing Crosby's real name was not Bing. It was, I think, Harry, right?
That's I guess what I understand. Yeah, but my real name is Bing, actually.
Because your dad was Bing.
That's right.
And your dad was named for Bing. And your name for your dad and Bing, I guess, right?
Yeah. My grandparents liked Bing Crosby. I suppose he had a great voice.
He did have a great voice.
That, maybe if they ever, named their son
did
after
ever,
Bing Crosby.
Did they ever meet him or anything, or no?
No.
So your dad's birth certificate says Bing, and so as does yours, right?
Bing Irvin Bush Jr. Yeah.
And Bing and Crosby's senior. Name is not Bing. Isn't that crazy?
Well, Joe, look, ZZ Top, they have long beards, but their drummer, Frank Beard, doesn't. So there's all kinds of crazy things in this world, okay?
Well, you know, I can't dance like him. I can't really sing like him. I never owned a racetrack. I can't golf very well.
If your mother's Italian and you're born in New York, your name might have been Bada Bing, but ba-dum-bum. But I digress.
Well, my wife's half Italian.
Have you had that? Oh, really? So you've had that joke before, right? No?
A couple times. And a lot of others. It's tough growing up with a name like Bing, I got to tell you. It's like a boy named Sue.
Yeah.
But anyway, born and raised in Lexington, which is probably the heart of thoroughbred...
Bluegrass country.
Yeah.
Heart of the bluegrass. You got it.
Yeah, and a lot of thoroughbred facilities out there. Is the grass really blue? Let me ask you that, because I always get this...
Well, they say that there's a little seed at the top of the grass that has a bluish hint to it when the sun hits it just right. And if you let it grow long enough and you have those little seeds, I suppose so.
All right.
And it's special grass, too, because of the limestone underneath that grass has very good nutrients. And so Lexington itself was sort of it became a mecca for the thoroughbred breeding industry because of its central location a long time ago. Because of that limestone, it had really good nutrients in it, so there's a lot of horses there. Horses were the main mode of transportation before the steamboat.
Mm.
And so Lexington was actually even the capital of Kentucky until the steamboat came along. Then Louisville wanted to be the capital. And sure enough, so they moved it from Lexington, but not to Louisville. They settled halfway between there and Frankfort.
Right.
But a lot of stables and stud farms and all that, they're in Lexington also, right? Isn't that where American Pharoah is today? Or
that's right. Okay. He is. He's
living the good life.
Along with a few others. That's right. Yeah.
So were your parents in the horse business? Or?
You know, no, they weren't. I mean, my dad was, golly, he worked at the Shell station when I was born, but finished up law school and then... practiced some law. We bought a little horse farm.
Okay.
And I grew up on a farm close to the Kentucky Horse Park. And we all had horses at that point, and just more in the pleasure riding. But then I kind of went on with it with the racehorses and stuff.
Mm. But, I mean, you actually worked with hunters, jumpers, and horse events and broke yearlings, you say, right? And
that's right. Yeah.
You exercised the horses, too? And
I was a lot skinnier then.
Yeah. Anyway, look, we're coming up on our break right now. Why don't we fire up the music there, Justin? We'll be right back with Bing Bush, equestrian law expert, right after this. Hang on.
I'm Mr. Red. A horse is a horse, of course.
All right, we are back with more of It's Your Money and Your Life. We're going to use all horse themes of this show because we have Bing Bush Jr. on, specializing in equine law with thoroughbreds all over the country and the world, for that matter, and high-level clients, of course, to go with it. And Bing, welcome back.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Now, we have to find out, you know, how you made your way out to San Diego.
Well, my sister, who's always been smarter than me, came out here before I did. She got a job with the La Jolla Light, mm-hmm. and I came out here during spring break in my first year of law school, and saw her, couldn't believe how beautiful it was, ended up moving up at, to San Diego, or out to San Diego right after that for mm-hmm. about a year, and, mm-hmm. You know, just fell in love with it, you know, and so I wanted to come back. And so I came out here, basically worked with horses, getting on 22 horses every day and giving riding lessons and things like that for about a year. And then I thought I better go back to Kentucky, finish up law school, mm-hmm. which I did, and then moved back out here for the 1987. Mm-hmm. And I've been out here ever since.
Outstanding.
Did you get a job with a law firm fairly quickly out here, or did you do some other things out here first?
Well, the first time I was out here, I was just working with the horses. Yeah. When I came back out here after law school, I did start with a law firm. It was called Hollywood Neal at that time. It was an insurance defense firm, and mm-hmm. then went on to another law firm when I passed the bar exam here, mm-hmm. and was with that firm for a long time. It was a guy named John Mullen and some other guys, and I was with them for a while and then made partner about 7 years later, mm-hmm. and stayed with them till about 1999.
Did they have an equine division, or is that something you started?
That was really more something that I was starting. That they weren't as into it as I was. And so after a while, I kind of started my own practice. I ended up leaving that law firm, and they're still good friends and great people, mm-hmm. And opened up an office in Lexington, Kentucky, my hometown.
Yeah, what did trigger the switch to say, this is the specialty I want to go into now? And when did that happen?
Sure. Well, opened my own firm in about 1999, went out to Kentucky and opened up an office there, and then came back here and had an office here, and I'm pretty much based here, but you know, you can't replace old roots, you know, as mm-hmm. much as they want me to. But
you always loved horses, and then the thought occurred to you, I can make a living, represententing owners and horses and whatever. Something must have enlightened you. Did you meet another attorney that specialized in that? Or
yeah, in my hometown in Lexington, there's a lot of equine law firms because it's sort of the mecca for the thoroughbred racing and breeding industry there. And so there's a lot of law firms that have equine divisions. When I came out to California, I found out there's not as many firms that really specialize in that. And so when I'm interviewing around and I said, well, I want to do equine law, they kind of looked at me like, what? They had no idea what I was talking about. But I kind of forged my own little way out here. There's a couple of guys up in L.A. and a guy out in Rancho Santa Fe who was kind enough to meet with me, and I kind of met with him and kind of felt like I enjoyed what they were doing and wanted to kind of forge my own path in that direction, which is what I did. And I formed some relationships with various people at the racetrack, which is easy for me because I grew up on the racetrack, and kind of grew from there.
Well, your office is not too far from there, right? You're right in downtown Del Mar, right?
Well, so. I was downtown San Diego for a long time and then moved up to Del Mar in about, early 2000s, and mm-hmm. And been up there ever since. Yeah. It's been great. It's a nice change of pace. I love it there.
Nice part of the world for sure. So, look, we got some of the greatest trainers in the world here. Bob Baffert, doesn't he operate out of San Diego?
Does have a home in North County as well, but he really is pretty much based up closer to Santa Anita Racetrack. Mm. Mostly operates out of there. But
tell us about this whole American Pharaoh phenomenon. I mean, this is probably one of the greatest horses ever, right?
In my estimation, best since Secretariat anyway. I'm so impressed by that horse, you know, as everybody is. You know, he's just got the most fluid movement that you could imagine at the gallop, and just the way he carries himself.
And of course, the Breeders' Cup, he blew everybody away, right? I mean,
well, to win the Triple Crown, which is the first time that's been done since 1978 with Affirmed.
Win the Breeders' Cup though, or no?
They didn't have the Breeders' Cup till 1994, okay. So that didn't exist back in those days. American Pharaoh did do that. He won the Triple Crown, which was just an incredible feat, and then came back as a 3-year-old and beat everybody. I mean, that's the best of the world, the Breeders' Cup is.
I mean, this horse could win wire to wire, which doesn't happen all that,
at all different distances.
Right?
Yeah, he's...
How often do you see a horse break and then fade? And this horse does not fade, right?
He's just that kind of athlete, you know, and I think he was in good hands and, you know, well cared for, and it was just one of those things that really worked out. And it was a really, it's kind of a boost for the racing public, too, because you want to see a champion like that, and he's a true champion. And
plus, I think it gets people interested who generally aren't interested in horse racing.
I think
when something historic is happening.
Well, it's the whole Seabiscuit thing all over again, right? And, of course, the owner had...
Almost go to the turkey trot.
almost. That horse would have run my race. But, I mean, it's no runners as fast as that horse.
So the owner, it's kind of a fairy tale story for the owner of American Pharoah, because that guy was, I guess, hit some rough financial times at one point in his life, right?
And, Mr. Zayed, I understand that. Yes, indeed. You know, and of course, he's done pretty well, though.
Mm-hmm. But has the practice of equine law changed? Because I know once upon a time, horse racing was really the sport of kings. So it was wealthy families that owned horses. But now I know a lot of people own small parts of horses, syndicates, you know, people getting together, athletes or other people who just think it's fun to be in that business. Has the business changed a lot in your 20 years in the business?
Yeah, it really, really has. You know, you're right. It was kind of the sport of kings. It was kind of a few families that had different breeding operations and farms, you know, on the East Coast primarily, and then out on the West Coast. And then the game changed probably about 20 years ago when they started making syndicates and where multiple people could own horses. And it really changed the texture and the culture, all of it, quite a bit. It made it far more accessible. Mm-hmm. But you have a lot of people in the industry who may not know as much about horses as they used to. You know, before, if you're in the horse industry, you knew the animal, you know, and our culture's come a long way, too. I mean, look, it wasn't that long ago where our horses were our cars. And I mean, you know, common sense was horse sense. Everybody had it, you know, and we all knew horses.
They were cars, and they were our trucks, and they fought wars, I mean, and everything, right?
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, the idea is that people understood more that things can happen with horses, you know, that you wouldn't expect because they're animals, you know, both beautiful things and some just awkward things. You just see horses do the darndest things sometimes. Mm-hmm. And if you've never been around horses, you think, well, how in the heck did that horse just kick up his back legs and get her legs caught up in a stall window, which just happened with one of my mares, you know. And you know, she ended up fine. She's going to be okay. We had to pull her out of the Keeneland horse sale this last November, which I was disappointed about. We'll put her back in
January.
Keep
her out
in
the corral more, I guess.
But I mean, they just do the darndest things, you know. But you know, at the same time, it's really opened it up to a lot more people, and it's been pretty fun. And I think you know, a lot more people are getting to enjoy it now than before.
Yeah.
As an ownership.
Well, my wife said she was going to buy part of a horse. I said, make sure you understand which part you're buying.
Now your largest client is this Sheikh Rashid from Dubai. Now you don't just wake up on Monday morning and you know, become his attorney. So that's a great story. Do you want to tell us how that all happened?
Wow. Well, first of all, I can tell you one thing I love about the racetrack, and probably the thing that I love the most about it, is that it really attracts people from every single socioeconomic background. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, just from golly, the most poor person that you can meet to the richest people that you can meet, and everybody in between. And they're really because of their love for the animal. I mean, really, mm-hmm. there's a pure love for the animal. These people aren't just in it for money. It's a real lifestyle, and it gets in your blood.
Mm-hmm.
But I was fortunate. I grew up, you know, in the industry a little bit. I was working at the Keeneland horse sales in Lexington growing up, and I knew this guy named Satish. He's from India, skinny Indian kid. And
is he a trainer, or what is it?
Well, he was over in the United States to learn a bit about the horse industry. He had worked with Monty Roberts, the horse whisperer, out here in California.
Okay.
And at this time, he was working at the Keeneland horse sales. It's a large horse sale in Lexington, Kentucky. It's probably the most prominent sales in the world, in fact. They have record prices for basically every kind of horse, every kind of thoroughbred. The thoroughbred yearling for $16.2 million. Wow. Didn't turn out to be anything, sadly. But
never ridden. It's like oil wells.
Right. So I'm working at the sales with Satish, and Satish and I became really good friends. And one time this horse gets loose, and Satish catches the horse as this guy was looking at the horse and brings him up to him. And the guy that was looking at the horse happened to be the ruler of Dubai, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum.
Oh, my gosh.
So Sheikh Mohammed's looking at the horse. He's impressed by Satish and his mannerism, how he handles the horse. And he offers Satish a job in Dubai. And so I think Satish figures, well, it's closer to home than where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. I've been in the States long enough.
And the pay must be good. So.
Pay wasn't bad at all. You know? That was a number of years ago. Uh-huh. But Satish went over there. He became an advisor to Sheikh Mohammed and kind of an older brother and a mentor to Sheikh Mohammed's oldest son, Sheikh Rashid. Mm-hmm. Rashid bin Mohammed Al Maktoum. And mm-hmm. so Rashid was a young lad then, but he grew up to be about, I don't know, I think he's about 20 years old when he decided that he wanted to have his own stable that was different from his dad, Sheikh Mohammed's stable. Now, Sheikh Mohammed had incredible stables all over the world, but Rashid kind of wanted to do his own thing his own way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess he asked Satish, well, who should I use for a lawyer? Well, Sheikh Mohammed has great lawyers in Lexington, Kentucky, and around the world. But I think that Satish, you know, felt like, he just felt like referring Sheikh Rashid to me, mm-hmm. of all people. And so I ended up with that account, and it's afforded me some really wonderful opportunities for myself and my family, some interesting trips over there and some interesting experiences indeed.
Well, it's a good life lesson because, you know, you never know who you're going to meet and who may be a helpful to you down the line. But anyway,
sure.
Up and Away? No, that's Superman. Anyway, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with Bing Bush, equine attorney, right after this. Hang on. Hi-yo, Silver. Away. That's all he would say.
Away.
Okay. Yeah, that's it. All right, we are back with the award-winning It's Your Money and Your Life, and this is the time where Richard thanks our sponsors.
Big thank you to our sponsors. Couldn't do this show without our great sponsors. At the top of the list, we have UBS. UBS on Prospect Street in downtown La Jolla, Michael Caranta and Drew Freitas. Big thank you, as always, to UBS. Also, our favorite CPAs on the planet, Jason Kruger, CPA, with Signature Analytics, a great CFO firm with offices in five locations along the West Coast. Also, more traditional CPAs, Polito Epic CPAs up in San Marcos. They moved about a year ago over to San Marcos. Lovely new offices, Don Epic and Paul Polito. Paul Polito, by the way, is a recent Advisor of the Year award winner here in San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Sheeler with Berkeley Research Group, helping business owners reduce the risks that are inherent in their business. If you reduce risk, you increase the value of the business. Berkeley Research Group, the greatest business valuation firm I've ever run into in this entire country. Again, Carl Sheeler. Also, Joel Grushkin with Cost Segregation Initiatives. Also had Joel's partner, Kurt Gautreau, on recently. Joel and Kurt help real estate owners improve their cash flow. Now, if you want to save all that money that you're making from Carl and Joel, how about Geiger Law Offices? Brenda Geiger specializes in asset protection and estate planning. Also, a great place to park all that extra money, California Republic Bank, a very interesting niche market bank out of Orange County that now has an office here in San Diego that specializes in the very unique needs, banking needs of wealthy families and family offices. Hub International, also known as Mars Maddox Insurance, recent guest Neil Staley, great employee benefits firm, very hot topic, given that we just finished open enrollment season for health benefits. Also, the LG Experience and the Lombardi Group have a large event coming up here for CPAs in San Diego next May. They help wealth advisors make heroes of CPAs to those CPAs' very best clients. And last but certainly not least, and also a recent guest on the show, Paul Hines, who is the CEO of Hearthstone Private Wealth Management. Paul also heads up the SeniorSafeAndSound.org initiative here in San Diego, helping to get the word out about senior, or should I say financial abuse of the elderly. So again, SeniorSafeAndSound.org. Mm-hmm. So a big thank you to all of our sponsors. Our website, of course, maintained by Courtney Lauver of PopX Graphics, where our listeners can find out all kinds of cool things about our sponsors. Right, Joe?
Absolutely. But did you mention Lane Elliott? Because I wasn't paying attention.
Well, I said California Republic Bank,
okay.
But I did not mention the names Lane Elliott or Sean Puckett. Sean
right.
Puckett, of course, recently joined California Republic Bank to head up their UTC office here
right.
in town.
And if you want to find out more, just get on your computer or any device and get onto iymoney.com, and there is a drop-down menu for all of our sponsors, and you can get all of their background information, contact information. I know they've been working with Richard for many, many years with great success, right?
In some cases, 30 years.
There you go. So
long time.
Personal, when you collaborate, you're giving your personal endorsement. Obviously, you we wouldn't recommend them if they weren't doing great work with you. So
these folks are like the Kansas City Royals, world champions.
This year, next year, they'll be like the Padres, or the Cubs, let's hope.
Not the Padres,
let's
I'm afraid.
Hope the Cubs win. By the way, at our website on iymoney.com, there is a guest tab, and you can find any guest on there alphabetically by last name, as well as the running blogs of all the shows. But obviously, you might want to hear Bing Bush's interview again, so you just go to the Bees and you'll find it there. So it's kind of convenient. And we've had
he'll be under the Bees.
Yeah, many great guests: Dick Enberg and Jim Lampley,
Billy Jean King, Don Rickles, Dickie Smothers, George Takei.
There you go.
On it goes.
There you go.
Man, I'm in a pretty tall cotton here.
Yeah, exactly.
The thoroughbreds of guests. That's what we have on this show. But Bing, I think you're working on a reality show. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, man. Well, I'll tell you, there's been so many unbelievable opportunities that have sort of come along because you meet so many characters in this business and just different little things happen. But yeah, there's a guy that I've known for quite a while. His name is Jimmy the Hat Allard.
And Jimmy the Hat.
He's incredible.
Is that like Jimmy the Greek Snyder?
That'd be even better. But Jimmy.
I'm glad he doesn't have an Italian last name. But
oh my God, well, what a background! I mean, this guy grew up in New York, His family had a couple of restaurants in New York, and they were kind of the prominent place where they're really bookmaking operations. Mm-hmm. I think. Am I supposed to say that? Yeah. This is how this guy grew up. Well, now he's on Southern California racetracks, and he comes to my office the other day, and he says, "Bing, I want to tell you about an idea for a reality TV show." And he trots this idea out for me, and it's kind of an interesting show. It's kind of like a handicapping show. That's a platform to show all the really good things about the horse racing industry.
Now, will this air what on CNBC or what's he thinking?
Well, we'll see.
Is there a horse racing channel, by the way? I think there is.
Of course, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a couple of them. Mm-hmm. There's TVG, HRTV. And of course NBC uses a lot of the Triple Crown races and some of the races leading up to the Breeders' Cup these days.
Well, look, let's be real. Let's be realistic. Without the wagering, people who would go to the racetracks. Obviously people, they want a dog in the fight, and wagering makes it interesting, and it's been going on for centuries. And let's not kid ourselves; it is an industry, and so there you have it. So,
well, yeah, and so what this show is kind of fundamentally about is basically an opportunity for people to kind of be tracked in their wagers, and each week they kind of either make the next cut or they don't. Mm-hmm. But it really kind of leads up to the Breeders' Cup, which is going to be coming to Del Mar Racetrack in November 2017. This is like the Super Bowl of racing. Coming to the Breeders' Cup. They just had it in Lexington just a little bit ago.
It's a huge deal.
Oh, yeah. They're going to bring probably $75 million to the area. In things related to the
net worth
Cup.
Of that audience, huh, Richard?
Yeah, I know.
Almost as much as you and me, right? In any event.
So Jimmy the Hat says.
Let's do this show. Basically, we're going to have these people, and then there's the final contest at the Breeders' Cup, and it's going to be kind of funny, and the winners get, this life-changing money. But the way it's going to come together is kind of magical, and to really understand it, you have to know Jimmy the Hat. He's really a character. Well, so he's telling me about this show, and it so happens that at that very moment, this guy named Scott Grossman comes by. Now, Scott has, I've known Scott for a while. He's an interesting fella. He has a thing called the Horse Calculator. It's an app that helps people to figure out which horses are going to win. Now, Jimmy the Hat would never use the Horse Calculator because he has his own way and his own style.
His algorithms.
He has his own algorithms,
Alfalfa rhythms.
Yeah, but, a lot of people use this thing. It's pretty cool, and it's actually surprising how accurate that thing is.
Uh-huh.
But in any event, Scott's also been involved in sort of the film industry for a while. And so right as Jimmy's pitching this story for me in my little office there in Del Mar, Scott happens to come by. And I think, my gosh, Scott, it may be no coincidence that you're here right at this particular moment. Do you have 10 minutes? Jimmy, will you tell him what you just told me? And they kind of got together. And it looks like they're, getting some traction on this show. And we're seeing what we can do to put it together. We've got the little production company that we're putting together. We're going to see how it comes off.
This has wheels.
It could be exciting, And we have some...
Has legs, has wheels, has something. I don't know. Has traction.
Yeah, I'd go with legs, maybe it'll go fast with wheels.
But
so funny story. My old high school shop teacher, Don Duncan, who later became a principal of schools in my dad's old school district.
Tell us this high school again.
It was the El Capitan High School out in Lakeside. Later became an usher at Del Mar Racetrack after he retired from the school teaching business. And he would tell me every year how much money, how great he was doing with his particular, you know, calculations and technique that he would use to bet on horses. So we'd go out and he'd get a seat, you know, when people were out of town, use their seats. He's like, oh, yeah, my system, it really, really works. Well, I was also Don's CPA. So when the next year would come around, I would find out how much he was lying about how well his system really worked. But it was funny. But, you know, so I know a lot of people, they only talk about their winners. They don't mention the other ones.
Oh, yeah. And then it's really embarrassing when you go out with people who've never been there before, you know, and they ask you who to bet on, and you tell them, and they go the opposite way. Right. And they always win, and you lose. And then they go around for the rest of their lives telling how people, you know, telling everybody else how dumb you were because you told them to bet on this horse.
Like, I went down to the paddock, and the horse was wearing like this pink thing, and I thought it was so pretty.
Yeah.
And
well,
then the other horse was wearing this other pink thing, and so I did an exact, you know, I boxed those two, and I won $800.
But I'm sure these experts, you know, they probably track, you know, what surfaces these horse, what results.
Yeah, and the jockeys, and too. I mean, don't the jockeys play a critical
role? Oh, it's mind-boggling, all the various things that they keep track of.
But, what they ate for breakfast, I don't know.
But don't the jockeys play a critical role?
Oh, yeah.
They're not all the same.
Yeah, they do. They really do. But it's got to be almost everything has to come together. Mm-hmm. You know, there's so much luck involved in horse racing. Generally, the best horse wins, but anything can happen in a horse race, you know.
You represent some jockeys, too, don't you?
I do. I've been very fortunate that way.
They do get injured, and pound for pound, they say they're the greatest athletes out there.
Absolutely.
A lot of people don't realize that. I know Larry King mentioned that once, who also liked his ponies for many, many years. So, but anyway, we've got to take our little break right now. Now we'll come back with Bing I. Bush Jr. of Del Mar, equine attorney and expert and all-around nice guy. Be right back. All right, we're back with Bing
Joe,
Bush.
We're off. And we're off. Away we go.
Oh, we're off. Now we're on.
And away we go.
That is Bing's doorbell and his cell phone ringer there.
Almost my favorite sound in the world.
We were talking about jockeys when we came back, right?
We left.
We're back now. Excuse me. Are we back yet, Justin? We are back, aren't we? But anyway, look at they are the greatest athletes pound for pound. A lot of them run. How many races during the course of a day? They don't run just one race. They'll run maybe 6, 7, 8 races, right?
Sure. A lot of your top jockeys, they'll be in several races in the course of a day. You know, and I mean, the whole jockey world is it's almost like acting. You have your top jockeys, and then you have the other guys that are kind of trying
second
to make
tier,
it.
Yeah.
And our circuit here in Southern California is a very, very competitive circuit. I mean, think about it. If you're going to be a jockey, where would you rather ride, you know?
Now, the jockey for American Pharoah, I mean, he had other great horses as well. And
Victor Espinoza. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've known Victor a long time. Great guy.
Mm-hmm.
He sure has. He has had some other good horses as well, you know, and he's had quite a career, you know. I think he's going to have a hard time topping American Pharoah. For that matter, I think anybody will, you know. But, you know, Mike Smith had Zenyatta. I don't know if you remember that beautiful mm-hmm. mare who had so much presence about her. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think that every rider, you know, has a couple of horses that is always going to be kind of first and foremost in their minds, and it just takes them to levels that...
And it's a dangerous job, right? I know Tim Conway has a foundation for... I think his brother was a jockey and got severely injured, but, I mean, they lose teeth and, you know, fractures and worse, right, and concussions and some paralyzed and some perish, right?
It's a profoundly dangerous sport, you know. If you think about it, you're on a horse that's going full speed... with a group of other horses in close quarters, you know, jockeys have to ride a straight line and, you know, they have to take chances at the same time, but they can't take too many chances, and finding that balance is really tough. There's what are called stewards at the racetrack. They're watching very carefully for anything that could be unsafe, and, of course, the jockeys are very competitive by nature, but at the same time, you know, they know that that their lives are on the line.
It's balance, strength, and stamina, because they're obviously not hanging on to any horn when they're running. No. How fast do they go, Richard? 40 miles an hour? You ever figured out the math on a...
You know, I never have, but I would guess it's at least that, isn't it?
That's kind of the standard, what they'll tell you, is, 40 miles an hour. I think American Pharoah was 50. But
Well, it's you know,
fast.
And plus the discipline of the jockey's lifestyle. I mean, they have to watch their weight meticulously, right? And
unbelievable. I remember stories about Lafitte Pinkaia. I think he was around for a long time and the winningest jockey of all time towards the end of his career. And I mean, their stories about him getting a brownie, and he'd literally take a toothpick and put it in the brownie and take it out and suck the toothpick, and that was his brownie. That was it. You know, and just the discipline that they have is pretty.
I heard one in an airplane, a famous jockey, I forget the name, but they gave him a bag of almonds. He took one almond and ate that at the beginning and one at the end, and threw the bag away. So
not uncommon, almost like another Lafitte Pinkai story.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
Yeah,
but they're all kind of like that. And some of them can make weight easier than others. But, you know, it's a tough business. And as they get older, you know, they're kind of almost like me. You know, they put on a little weight.
Yeah. You know? Well, now, speaking of horse safety, the track surface at Del Mar has gone back to turf. I know they're having some horses getting
to dirt.
Dirt. Tell us about the transition and how that plays out, you know, nationwide as far as helping the horses, you know, stay healthy.
Sure. Well, you know, in the United States, we have turf tracks and we had dirt tracks for a long time. Now, back in Europe, it's pretty much all grass, you know, but here we had dirt tracks. A few years ago, my goodness, it must have been about 10, 15 years ago, they introduced synthetic tracks. Keeneland Racetrack in mm-hmm. Lexington, Kentucky had a training track, and they used synthetic on that track, and then it kind of grew from there to be used at other racetracks. And it was felt to be more safe for the horses because it was a little bit more forgiving, the compaction of it, mm-hmm. and the way it would handle water when
kind of like a rubberized, track that we would run.
Similar to that, you might say, mm-hmm. you know. But then as time wore on and other tracks, you know, went to that surface. In fact, California one time had mandated that the tracks go to that mm-hmm. surface. There began to be some complaints about it with horses that might have some other injuries, not the catastrophic fracture type of injuries, but other more tendons, ligaments, and things of that sort. Mm-hmm. So I think that and there's a lot of trainers that really kind of wanted to see them coming back to dirt. And I will tell you that statistically, the number of catastrophic breakdowns did reduce with the synthetic tracks. I was very concerned, in fact, when Del Mar went from synthetic to dirt. But I can tell mm-hmm. you, it's been really remarkable. They've done a magnificent mm-hmm. job at the Del Mar Racetrack and in this dirt track, and really keeping it in good shape, and you know, reduced the number of injuries as well. And it's worked out nicely.
And I know, aside from your law practice, you've done a lot of work with just conserving horses in general with our friend with the film. You can talk about that.
Connie Louise with the Wild for Life mm-hmm. Foundation. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've been involved. There's numerous, and a lot of people don't really realize this, organizations that are dedicated to taking care of racehorses at the end of their careers and repurposing them into the horse show industry.
Madeline Pickens also, too. We could talk about her.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, she has quite a ranch out there mm-hmm. for horse rescue. Both in the thoroughbred industry and just the industry at large, you know, just horses at large, just to make sure they're taken care of. And, you know, I think in a way PETA's kind of giving horse racing a bad name. You know, mm-hmm. it's not that horses aren't injured, but what people don't recognize is that these horses are so well taken care of, that they love to run, and they really truly are treated like athletes. They're getting massaged and just the latest technology to take care of them in a really profound way. And then at the end of the careers, they really are taken care of, you know.
I think they give the horse pets. I think I've seen cats or goats put in with the horses, right?
Goats, yeah. Well, you ever heard that phrase, get your goat? Like if you're angry, goat.
Yeah.
Well, see, the goat is a calming influence on horses, and so you'll have a goat, you know, close to a horse stall to keep the horses calm, and that's kind of where that phrase came from, as a matter of fact. Yeah, kind of interesting.
I did not know that.
But, yeah, there's After the Finish Line I've been involved with Don Mellon, and it's a really great organization that raises money for the boots on the ground, other horse rescue organizations to help fund them with, you know, hay and mm-hmm. and veterinarian costs and stabling costs and things of that sort. There's Wild for Life Foundation, which put together that film called Saving America's mm-hmm. Horses.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness, Red Bucket Rescue is a wonderful organization, and I'm on the board for it as well. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, they're like great athletes. I mean, their life expectancy is much, much longer than just their racing life, much like any athlete.
Right. Yeah. You know, a lot of these horses, they'll live to be in their 20s nowadays.
But how many years can a horse race?
Well, John Henry was racing and winning at 9 years old.
Right. But that's really unusual.
That is unusual, but it happens, you know.
Yeah.
So how long can they race? It's a pretty fair question. Mm-hmm. You know, you see them running, you know, 9, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. I think more typically you'll see them running at, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years old, you know, 6 years old, maybe. Some of them, like American Pharoah, unfortunately, is retired, but it's not a function of of any kind of malady or injury or anything like that. It's economics.
His value has nothing left to accomplish.
His value as a parent has gone up. Right. So true. And what if he risks another year and gets injured or something, right? And you know,
sure. It's just he just makes more money as a stallion than he does on the racetrack. That's all there is to it.
Well, I know the feeling. But
$200,000 a shot.
What a
it's
life,
gonna work if you can get it, Joe.
Yeah, but it's you've got to be dedicated to work in the horse industry. I mean, these people up early, right?
And it's every day. I mean, horses have to be fed every day. They have to be taken care of every day. Mm-hmm. There's no days off, you know.
You know what I think is the coolest thing is when you transport the horse like across country, the airplanes they fly in.
Yeah. They. I mean, there's several different outfits that do that. Even FedEx does it, you know. And
when he absolutely has to be
there.
They're
a lot nicer than South Joe. Put it this way: they're a lot nicer than Southwest.
But they get more peanuts. Anyway, we're ready to wrap it up here, I believe. Bing Bush Jr., thank you so much for being our guest.
You guys are great.
It's a lot of fun, Bing. Thanks.
Yeah, get over to horselawyers.com. And Richard, always great seeing you. Justin Hart, thanks for making us sound good, our board operator. Thank you to Craig Blanke, our con executive, and to Dave Smith, our programming genius here at KFMB. All these podcasts are
only 20 shopping days left till Christmas.
Right. all these podcasts are on iymoney.com. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Joan Embry next week, by the way. Joan Embry. Bye-bye.